the show.
Welcome to this week's edition of The Boundless Show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. And with me today, I have four girlfriends. Steve and Candace have gone on vacation, so I decided to just finish the job and kick Mott and Ted out of the studio and bring some of my friends in instead. With us today, we have Shiloh, Jen, Christina, and Jenny, all local yokels. Give a shout out,
hello.
Ladies.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
All right. So,
I wanted to differentiate my voice from theirs. They were doing it at the same time.
You did a fantastic job of. That was super.
You're flirting.
I don't know what, yeah. Like, stop flirting with the mic. Whatever. Like, you want to marry it? No.
Skills. Practicing my skills every opportunity.
Yeah, okay. Well, now I'm going to make us look crazy, because I'm actually going to talk about how I made this tomato bisque the other night. And I actually got it from a deli, so I didn't like make it from scratch. But I ate like half of it. I did look to see how many servings there were, but then I ate like half of it. And then I looked at the nutritional content, and I realized that in saturated fat grams alone, in one serving, I had ingested about 19. I'm not even joking.
Saturated.
Like that. Saturated.
Saturated,
fat.
No forgiving.
Yeah,
nothing.
I mean, that's not even good. I mean, like, why do we at this age, I mean, that just like the whole food situation is a little bit sketchy as far as like things we eat and we don't know that we're eating.
The fact
it.
That you can make probably a tomato bisque natural, homemade,
with yeah. like one saturated fat.
Mm-hmm. Well,
we
maybe,
buy
yeah.
it from the
but
store.
But wouldn't you just make it with like half and half? Christina's a food mm-hmm. expert, so she knows about foods.
Yeah, but you can adjust your half and
you
half.
You know about I cream. Mean. Whatever.
Cream is my friend, yes.
Uh-huh. Do you stomp on the tomatoes, kind of like,
in the
bathtub. Yes. Squash them yourself, because that's natural and homemade. A little
you know,
bit of
it
foot.
Adds something to the flavor.
I've seen her bathtub. Let's not even go there.
About
nasty.
What
can and extra protein. It's all good.
Anyway.
Can and can't
but
be
no,
made
no, no. But just the fact that, yeah, we buy all this stuff that's already made in the stores, and we're victim to, well, a willing victim to whatever they're willing to put in it.
I have the opposite problem, though. I love these new granola bars that have a lot of fiber in them. And so occasionally I'll eat more than one, and that is not a good result either. It's healthy, but
the fiber doesn't have
like 90.
Any...
Who are you?
They have chocolate in them.
Fiber and chocolate is a happy place.
A handful of prunes or something.
No, it tastes like a candy bar. But
yeah,
if you
whatever.
Eat more than one, just watch out.
And then if you drink a Diet Pepsi with that,
oh yeah, it's just a
just
mixture for trouble.
I do have to say, a coworker of mine's son got the Fiber One bars.
Yeah,
and
that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, he ate like five in one day.
Oh.
And then went to school the next day. And he was telling me the story at work about his son. It was just hilarious. About
yeah.
yeah, I don't know if we want to go into Zara's story.
We probably don't need any more digestion.
Remember the days when it used to be that I was the one living out my dreams? And whatever happened to that great big smile? When did it not become my style?
We're actually going to talk about online dating, and just to preface this, we are going to have another podcast where we're going to talk with men about their views on online dating, okay? So I don't want anyone to start booting up their computers now and writing me with a big diss about women and how we only talk to women and whatever, because we will be getting the male perspective on this in the future. So, but we're going to try to, we're going to keep it funny, but also positive, because those of you out there who have done this, you know that you get some whack stuff. You totally know it, okay? So we're going to talk about that, but we're also just going to talk about some of the issues that surround the whole, you know, quagmire of online dating as it exists. So, and I mean, honestly, how many sites are out there? The Christian, like if you take only the Christian sites, what are we talking?
20? Oh, I'm
at least 20.
I have profiles on like 10. Oh, is that wrong?
Oh,
okay.
Probably a couple hundred.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jenny's going to get some counseling after this.
I am in counseling.
Like
it's tragic.
There's all kinds of stuff surrounding that. That's awesome. Okay. So anyway, there are just a lot of sites out there. Many people are on many of them simultaneously. And there's just some wacky stuff there. So I want to start actually by throwing out the question, why in the world are Christian singles today even online? I like to talk about my sister. My sister Tina was 20 when she got married, and her common comment to me which has kind of become a catchphrase among some of my friends and myself, is it should not have to come to this. She told me that one day when I was telling her about online dating, and she was just so dejected about it and was just wondering why Christian singles today are online. So that's the question I want to throw out, and let's start discussing it. Why are we online?
Because that's part of society. Things that affect society affect the church. Christina's sister, Jan, and I once listened to this NPR show about third places and how in society, there aren't places where you can really meet and be introduced where people are intentional. So even at church, where you're surrounded by maybe single people, nobody's really there as stepping in and introducing and helping people be purposeful. So I think online dating is a result of needing to find a place where you can be introduced.
You know, I think that being online breeds what I call like a consumer mentality. Mm-hmm. Like the fact that you can just sit there, and I call it, you know, you're on one of the sites, you can sift through profiles like they're paint samples, and you can just go through and select your shade and then cast aside all the others. And then you kind of start, you know, weeding your way down and selectively choosing these people.
Or to use a good like illustration of, you know, those wedding registry, but things you're going through. The last time I got on one of the sites, I basically did that. If they weren't a freak, if their profile or something like that seemed normal, I did. I went through and I initiated and went through and went through and went through and just kind of let them weed themselves out, I guess. And a couple of them came to the surface, and some of them didn't even, you know, respond to it. But I felt like I was a woman with a gun.
Shooting blanks. I'm serious. Like, they don't come back. They go out there in the Neverland. Yeah. And never return.
Yeah. Well, so what do you think is the allure when we look at that, when we realize that there are guys within our acquaintance who are not asking us or the women that they know out, but instead they're talking to someone in Boca Raton? What is the reason for that? What is happening, you think? What's that dynamic?
Well, it is that ability to, on the outside anyway, pretend you're more...
idealized, maybe?
The idealization of another person, where you can just sit back and philosophize and pour out your heart. I think there's a lot of false intimacy that happens. The intimacy happens way too quickly and not at a normal pace.
Yeah.
And it's also just to actually see a woman who has flaws and to potentially be held accountable if the relationship doesn't go well. It's just much easier to go to somewhere anonymous where you don't know the other person's friends and family and make up your own relationship as you go. And you can also, at the front end, do your weeding. You can pull off people like clothes from a rack and say, well, I like this about this person and not this about them. I must have someone who's organized. And you can create a lot of parameters in relationships that you wouldn't normally have if you just met in a normal context.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it also can, even to more of an extreme, it can allow you to kind of set up almost a false persona. I mean, you wonder, like, how many of these people are so self-deluded that they're just, you know, they're kind of like misrepresenting themselves, I feel, because then you're, you know, Jenny, you had actually shared with us yesterday, apparently there's a Brad Paisley song out that, because I think we do need to spend just like, you know, 1 minute and 4 seconds or something on really the freaky people that are out there. I mean, there are some freaky people, and we don't know. And I have talked to guys who've gotten some freaky stuff. I mean, there is one guy friend of mine who got this photo of a girl who looked like it was like a 1988 drill team photo from somewhere in the middle of Texas. I'm just like, this girl is not for real. This is out of some weird catalog or something. So, I mean, I know it happens on both sides, but I know that Brad Paisley song talks about this guy who, like, you know, on his profile, he drives a Maserati and he does, you know, he's all super cool and he has like 6-pack abs and is 6'5 and whatever, but really he's living in his parents' basement and is like a freak and is, you know,
yeah,
whatever.
It's hilarious.
So, I mean, it's pretty, you know, it's kind of a shout out and a little bit of a commentary on the whole online scene. But we must admit, and I mean, Shiloh, you're going to have to share with us. I mean, we have had some freaky, and I'm using it as two words, there's freak and there's E, stuff from people and from profiles. And it's like, where do you just misrepresent yourself or feel like, you know, you want to sell yourself or market yourself online? And where are you just seriously delusional about not only who you are, but what you're looking for. And Shiloh, you've got to just tell us about this guy that you got matched with, because it's awesome.
I don't even know where to begin with him.
We'll summarize for us.
We'll call him B, I guess. And it started out well, where he talked about his career and who's been influential in his life with his parents and being married 41 years and some spiritual mentors in his life. And then it went down from there, where he was really picking something from top shelf that he was looking for. And it all revolved around being with a very attractive younger woman as basically
sexual, isn't that?
Bottom line.
Well, and how many times did he reiterate that? It was like 3 or 4 times at least.
Oh,
yeah. It was
just
weird.
I mean, he exposed his tang-ups. You know, that's a good thing. You know that up front.
Well, yeah.
Do you want to read this, Lisa? Because I think in some ways...
Yeah, I mean, I think there are just a couple things here. I mean, there are just concerns here, because this guy basically paints himself as a solid believer. His parents have a solid marriage. Looks like he grew up in an intact family. He gives his church, which by all accounts would be a very solid evangelical Bible-believing church. And then he goes into what he's looking for, and he basically says sexual attraction is critical. Looking for a toned confident... Who even says toned in a profile? I mean, this is a creepy...
What about confident, refined body with unquestionable femininity?
What is a confident and refined
unquestionable femininity?
I mean, it's just like, I mean, all of a sudden he presents himself as something, but then everything that he puts out there as far as what he's looking for is just downright nasty. I mean, but to say that. And then he gives like an age range, which starts at 22. Hello.
And he's okay. 35, supposedly.
Oh, okay.
On his
profile. Well, you know, I got matched with the guy who was 35, but he ended up being 49. So let's not, you know, we can't take that at face value. But he just goes into this whole weirdness about where he mentions literally several times the physical attraction element. It looks like he is...
What kind of woman is so confident that she would even respond to that?
Yeah.
You know, we have a lot of attractive women around this table. Would any of us feel confident enough about ourselves to go, well, I'm exactly what he's looking for?
Well, even if you were that confident, would you want to be with a man that shallow? Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one of the problems with online dating, is that so much of this is done in isolation. Mm-hmm. And people are not, you know, they're online. Many people don't even know that they're online. And to be online, you have to have accountability and you have to have people speaking into your life. Otherwise, there is. I mean, I know when I read this thing, when I read this profile, we actually told you, Shiloh. I mean, we're like, this guy actually starts out by bragging basically about the mentorship that he has from these guys. And I'm just like, I would be mortified if I was one of these guys and had someone shout out and say, hey, they're my mentor. Well, you know what? This guy's weird. I mean, and he's got issues. And I'm like, you know, we need to I seriously was like, you need to contact this guy, this pastor, and tell him that this guy is claiming him as a mentor, because that is not even right. I mean, that is not, I mean, this guy needs to be up in his face about a few of these things. And if that's not the case, I mean, that's just concerning. So I think that is, I mean, we do know, for example, I mean, just kind of wrapping up here, we do know that online dating is good, and Candace has said this many times on Boundless, it's good for volume. It's good for meeting people in large volumes and just kind of, you know, making that acquaintance, making that connection. But getting beyond that, you know, is so difficult, and you can get caught in the quagmire of, you know, really what's real and what's not.
But then like my situation, you meet somebody who rises above, you mm-hmm. know, and someone who actually sets themselves apart from anybody else you've met before, which is exciting. And who knew that this would happen online? You know, we would have never met anywhere else. And we wouldn't have run into each other at a grocery store, or at church, or at a bar, or at a restaurant, or at a book club, or you know, whatever. mm-hmm. God used this amazing resource mm-hmm. for good.
Yeah. So, but the difference is you eventually have to take it into real time and real space.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, these relationships that go on for 6 months, 8 months online, that's basically a pen pal.
Yeah.
so it's kind of like recognize the difference between that. So, mm-hmm. Well, good. We're going to go ahead and wrap it up. I like to kind of think that this has been a fly on the wall segment for folks to listen in as girls sit around and talk about their experiences with online dating. Kind of fun to do. Again, we hope to do it again sometime, and we'll eventually allow some guys in here to share their perspective. In the meantime, please email us, editor@boundless.org. We would love to hear your thoughts on online dating, both male and female. Start to talk to us. Tell us your experiences, your trials and tribulations, as well as your success stories. And yeah, we would just love to hear from them. Thanks, girls, for being part of this.
Thank you.
What would it be like if we learn to love each other? What would it be like if we live like we believe that everybody matters, and we're all here together, and we all need each other to make it through this life? What would it be
for this week's culture segment, we're going to continue our conversation with Nick and Chris of Salvador. Both last week and this week, the music that you've heard during the podcast has been from their new album, Aware. And Ted and I, as you know, were able to sit down with them and just talk about life on the road and their own families and what they've learned along the way. What would you say, either of you, is the role of the church in really coming alongside young adults, for example, in training them up, in mentoring them? In how did that play out for you? I know, obviously, your parents were strong role models for you and really introduced Christ to you. But what would you say the role of others in your church or in your community were? How did that impact you?
Oh, for me, and as I kind of alluded to before, being thrust into a, I said public school as if that's some sort of thing to be feared, but let me rephrase. As I was thrust into the real world of just mainstream America, it was not a solo act, and that's not and going it alone is not the model Christ left for us. His example is mentoring and discipleship with a group of very close friends. There's no reason for people to try to live the Christian life alone, and it's a bad idea. You have somebody there to have your back and to point things out to you and help you avoid a pitfall. That is a wonderful thing, and I think that's essential to finishing the race well. My youth group was there. I was able to be there for other people, and other of my friends were there for me. We got out of the high school years, and I got out of the high school years as a pure young man without baggage of emotional guilt and doing things wrong and trying to rebuild a crumbled life. I got out strong and growing, and a youth group and a vibrant church is essential to that. I really believe that.
Mm-hmm. What would you say, for example, maybe Nick, you can jump in on this one. What would you say for young men specifically, whether they're single or married? I mean, how is that accomplished for men today who aren't going to necessarily go like women do and sit down and gab for 2 hours and have coffee and chit-chat over books and whatnot?
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look the same. So how would you say, what does that look like today for men?
You know, I think that the world for a young man has become a lot more complicated over the last 10, 12 years, just because of the things are so much more accessible. The internet, television, cable, things that can be covered up. I think that a lot of times for a man, I believe that, you know, guilt is one of the hardest things that we have to get over. And whether that's as far as, you know, you may not admit something to another friend because you're ashamed of what you've done. And sometimes, and I don't mean to say this, you know, generally, but in my specific scenario, I've seen that some of the ladies in my life, they've come out a lot more forward with the things that they struggle with. And guys our pride will keep us and say, you know what, I'm cool. I'm okay. And I think that those are the things that that young men have to understand, is there are people out there that not want to hear, but that need to hear what you're going through. And yeah, actually, this is funny that we would talk about this. I've been writing a book for about a year, and that book is the impact of what the different positions of church do for a young man growing up in church. And that is anywhere from a children's church pastor, Sunday school pastor, youth pastor, deacon, musician, music leader, worship leader, director, person that picks up the offering. I mean, all those people have an impact on a young man, I believe. And, I always loved when my dad was a military man. My dad was a Marine. And I love when my dad would encourage things that I thought were positive in people by saying, For instance, a perfect example, if Chris walked in and spoke at my church, played his piano, my dad would usually, this is just an example, my dad would grab me by the shoulder and say something to me like, "That's excellent, son. That's excellence. That's something to strive for. That's what God wants us to be like in everything that we do." And those fabrics are the fabrics that I think that I grew up thinking, okay, these are the things. And when something would come on television that was not for me to see, my dad would say, "That is not okay. That will pollute your mind." My dad was an amazing, I always brag on my dad and just say that even if a woman came out in something that was just too flattering, I mean, we live in the real world. You can't, there's commercials that come on. Nowadays, I don't even know what the commercial's about. It's more about everything else except the product. Mm. And I even, still to this day, I'm 30 years old. I get uncomfortable when I'm with my dad and a woman walks on TV and she's wearing something. I'm just going, oh boy, I'm so embarrassed because I feel like, oh, my dad's right here. And that was kind of one of those things where my dad would say stuff like, he'd change the channel and go, "This is junk. This is trash. This is not okay." And so I think that in the position that people have in churches, you know, one of the guys in our band is a youth pastor. And his deal is that he's trying to show his kids a better way about thinking about things. You know, as young people, there's so many temptations out there. So as a young man, that's something that I've actually thought about a lot. What are the things that, you know, the church does to go side by side by a young person, especially young men? So, and I encourage young men out there, you know, there's people out there that will listen. You don't have to blab your story to everybody, but there are people out there that understand, because you know what? At some point, every man that's older has been a young man at one time.
Even in the little things that never seemed too big to me, and the things I thought didn't matter much at all, as simple as my daily bread, to the strength I need to get out of bed, when I fly or when I'm about to fall.
Next up, we have John Thomas with this week's edition of The Hungry Ears.
It was about 2 a.m. on a cold December night, and I was talking on the phone to Julie, a girl who called the radio station just to chat. She thought I was Smokey Morgan, a country music disc jockey. I was not Smokey Morgan, but a college student home from school for the holidays, working one of the many part-time jobs I'd picked up to make a little extra Christmas money. I was pulling the graveyard shift at Kickin' Country, one of my hometown's radio stations, and my duties were to write a few news stories for the morning newscast, update the recorded temperature announcement, and replace massive reel-to-reel tapes when they finished playing. On those tapes were songs, commercials, and the smooth, resonant voice of Smokey Morgan, a man whom I'd never met and who'd never been to our radio station and who'd probably never even heard of our little town. Julie called on the studio line my very first night. I answered the phone, and I could hear Kickin' Country playing on her end of the phone. Yeah, can you tell me what time it is? What time it is? She had a phone, she had a stereo, and enough intelligence to operate both of them, but she had no watch. I told her it was 2 a.m. Tuesday morning. She thanked me and was gone. The next night, she called again. Same time, same question. The third and fourth night, she called again, and the questions meandered from inquiries about the time to the temperature to the day's forecast. By the end of our first week, our little 2 a.m. Q&A had stretched to a five-minute conversation. Julie became what I'd like to think of as my first and only groupie. It was during one of these conversations that Julie asked a question I hadn't expected, but probably should have. "Is this Smokey?" I panicked. When I took this job, it was never my intention to impersonate someone twice my age with a voice several octaves lower than the left end of a piano. But duty called. Kickin' Country was Oz, and from 11 p.m. to 5 a.m., I was the wizard. Truth is, for as long as I could remember, I wanted to be Smokey Morgan, or at least some version of him. It was not a desire of mine to be a DJ. It was an obsession bordering on psychotic disorder. I caved. I gave in to the temptation. Yeah, I said, my voice cracking, sounding more like poo than Smokey. There was no way she would buy it. But Julie didn't even notice. She just kept right on talking. She told me her name, asked questions about my life, asked what it was like to be a famous DJ, was Smokey my real name, and was I married? Was I married? Whether or not God intended it, that question jolted me out of Kickin' Country into reality. It was time to come clean with Julie, who, from my perspective, had transitioned from a watch-less insomniac to a potential stalker. I was already tired of being famous. I longed for my normal life again. Look, I'm really sorry. I'm not Smokey Morgan, I confessed. I don't even know who Smokey Morgan is. I'm just a college student doing a part-time gig over the holidays. I have no idea what Smokey's marital status is, but maybe I can get you his address. I spilled everything. The DJs weren't really at the radio station. Their voices were on tapes that had been recorded far away from here, and Smokey was being heard at that very moment in about 30 cities across the nation. I was now Toto, pulling back the curtain. I felt cleansed. Oh, she said, slightly stunned with so much revelation at once. Why didn't you just say so? Because I'm a complete moron, I thought. It's a long story, I said, but you've helped it have a good ending. We said our goodbyes and went about our middle-of-the-night activities, which for me included thanking God for his perfect plan for my life, whatever it was, and for a girl named Julie who didn't have a clock, but whose timing was perfect. 'Cause you rescue me, you hear my cry, you shelter me through the night.
For today's Boundless Inbox, we're actually going to be talking to Mott Brown, and this is kind of an interesting question or Q&A session because this is a response that you just received, Mott, from a reader. You wrote a blog post this week called The Risk of Less Education, in which you talk about your own experience kind of making that decision between should I take a graduate degree or shouldn't I, and maybe some of the pros and cons to that. Well, you received a reader response. He actually commented on the blog, a guy named Justice, and he wrote, "Mott, so you never got a graduate degree. I have the same values, want my fiancé to stay at home, live debt-free, etc. How do you recommend this to people who live in expensive areas? I live in California, but we're actually thinking of moving to Hawaii. Both places are pretty comparable in living expenses." So what's Justice going to do here, Mott? He wants to be on the beach.
Yeah, well, it's a great question, and I can speak to it a little bit because my wife and I lived in D.C., which was an expensive area when we were first married and trying to make it on one salary. And so the first thing I would say is how convicted is he that he wants his fiance, his soon-to-be wife, to stay at home? Because it's going to require sacrifice, and in my case, it required something radical. When Beth and I were first married, we both wanted her to stay home. And so it wasn't an option for us. We had decided that before we were married. We knew each other well enough. And so living in D.C. on one salary was a stretch, at least my salary.
And you're saying that you had both decided beforehand that if you had kids, she was going to stay home.
That's
right. That was your decision.
Okay. Yeah, that's right.
And it's obviously a good thing to note here that that is a great question to have decided prior to marriage. I mean, both parties need to be on the same page saying that if we are to have kids, for example, you will stay home. You know, I mean, this is something that we both want. We're going to work towards that goal. So just want to put that on the table as a given.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm assuming he means she can stay home when they have kids, because that's what we did. Beth was working when we got married, and as a matter of fact, that's what enabled us to pay off all our debt when she found out she was pregnant. So yeah.
It's a good plan in and of itself.
It is. I mean, the thing is, it's good to want to do on the front end, because many times couples get married and they establish a lifestyle together based on two salaries. And it's very difficult after that to go back to one. So you have to have that mindset on the front end, like you were saying, to want to live on one salary. And we had that. So it wasn't a shock to Beth, and it wasn't a shock to me that this was going to be an issue when she got pregnant. And it just turned out that she got pregnant very soon after we were married. So what to do? Well, we had planned for me to get a graduate degree to pursue a career in politics on the Hill, and everyone around me was getting advanced degrees, and I felt like I had to. I liked politics, I liked law, and that's what we wanted to do. The problem is, I shouldn't say the problem, the good thing is she got pregnant just about the week I was going to begin classes. And it threw us. We knew that we were going to be facing a lot of debt, and living in an expensive area like DC, if that's where we wanted to settle in a career in politics. And we really just had to reevaluate everything. And we did. And the first thing we decided to do was not to pursue that graduate work, because we knew that it would be $20,000, $30,000. And we had to come up with another plan. And so we did. We decided to leave DC and take a job in sales in another part of the country, in a more affordable part of the country, just so she could stay home. I mean, I know that sounds really radical to some, but we were that convicted that we wanted her to be able to stay home. So we did. We packed up all our things. I took a job as a loan officer in Colorado Springs, making cold calls, about 50 a night, which was a nightmare. And just trusting God, trusting that God would lead us or me to a career that would provide for my family. And so it really comes down to that. Is God convicting you and your wife in this decision? And if so, what are you willing to do about it? Mm-hmm. That's kind of the question they need to ask.
Well, and I think it's interesting. It just reminds me of what we hear so much of previous generations, you know, who, like my parents, for example, who were very, it was assumed as you left college and got married, which people generally did more so back at that time, that you were going to pretty much start out in the poorhouse and you were going to eat your ramen and your eggs and whatever and live off the orange crates and stuff like that. And that perception is not around as much anymore. I mean, I seriously know couples that are getting married, registering for like who knows what china that they're not going to use and buying rooms of Ethan Allen furniture. What would you say, like, to Justice, for example, because this may be like a rude wake-up call for him? What if he's, you know, just off doing ski trips here and there? I mean, what would you say, what made that life look like? What are some things, for example, that you knew you just had to give up when you got married and made the commitment to have Beth stay home?
Wow, we didn't know we were going to be giving up, to be honest with you. We knew it was going to require sacrifice. I didn't want to go into marriage in debt, so I sold my car to pay for the honeymoon and her ring. And that was just one sacrifice. I moved the furniture I had with my roommates into our one-bedroom apartment in downtown D.C., and some stuff from home. So yeah, we didn't go out and purchase Ethan Allen furniture right away. As a matter of fact, I can't remember when we bought our first couch. Maybe we bought our first couch 4 or 5 years into our marriage. Things like that. I mean, you have to have that mindset that you are willing to do what it takes to live on one salary. And those are just a couple of examples.
And I think there's good application for singles here, just even in the here and now, because I, for example, was planning on going to Yale. And I think to myself, you know, now I do the work in media and public relations, which I did not. I actually started an advanced degree and didn't finish it. But for me, it's like in the world of media and public relations, if you can't figure out how to write a press release and how to get on the phone and talk to people with a bachelor's, you're not going to be able to do it with a master's. I mean, I know so many PR people that are like getting advanced degrees, racking up more debt, and or going to very prestigious schools, when I hire all the time now here at Focus, and I rarely look at where someone went to school. I look at what their experience is, and then really so much of it comes down to the interview, and are they a go-getter? Do they have the aptitude to do the job? Are they willing to do what it takes to learn the skills? Mm-hmm. And it's just, I mean, it's just an encouragement to folks out there to just realize that there's so much more that, you know, goes into this plan than what you learn on paper and really what kind of pedigree you have as far as, you know, schools and or degrees.
That's right. The catalyst for the blog was another blog that I read on World Magazine blog from Anthony. I think his name is Anthony Bradley. And he was talking about his negative net worth, his $50,000 of negative net worth. And he was lamenting the decisions he made. I think he was lamenting of pursuing divinity degrees and doing graduate work. And I think it was his call that, you know, look at this very carefully. Do you really need to do this? And because you are going to go into debt in doing this.
Yeah. Well, and that just, I mean, honestly, if you're 30 years old and you're pursuing multiple degrees still, you have larger issues than just, you know, what job you're ultimately going to get with it. So, well, Mott, this was great. I think this will be helpful to folks who hear this. Thanks so much for doing that blog post and obviously for following up with the Q&A. I think that will be helpful to not only Justice, but to many of us who have questions and who are kind of moving along our life and career paths. Until next time, I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.